Did you simply feel that kind of pressured by the circumstances? Or did you feel you had a genuine interest in talking?
They forced the line of questioning on me. It was unavoidable. They wanted to make me a drug user without sufficient proof. And I
began the drug war as a pretext for stripping you of your liberties before we even begin, before they even have any evidence whatsoever of anything. But I note that you weren't taken into custody, you weren't given a ticket. In fact, you successfully resisted the search of your vehicle, if you're accurately describing what happened.
Yes, that's accurate.
And you also told me that, I guess it was last night, when you were parked, I'm not going to say where, because I don't wish to
reveal my identity.
Reveal your forbidden sleeping spot. You saw police officers take a man on a bicycle away. Apparently, he'd been sleeping in a vehicle in front of you, or he'd been, his vehicle was parked in front of you. And four squad cars were involved in that operation.
Yeah, it seemed a bit excessive. I saw the police pick up a man on a bike. I believe his only failure was to produce ID, but I don't know the whole history
of this person.
But it did occur at around 10:30, and there were about four or five squad cars on the call, which seemed excessive for one man on a bicycle.
He's obviously at one point, you're full of shit, but you didn't hear much else?
Yeah, the one police officer replied to a statement made from this person. Quote, I think you are full of shit.
But you didn't have no sense of what the actual business that they were up to was?
They seemed to want some information from him. They confiscated his bike and handcuffed him and took him off. So I'm not quite sure his whereabouts or
what actually was going on,
what actually happened or what went on.
Get further reports. First, we'll expect you to get your shot, arm, leg, or abdomen. Get back in touch with us here at the radio. Let us know what's going on. People who are... Yeah, I was going to say that if you're approached by a police officer, which is much easier to do in the daytime when there are witnesses around, you don't have any outstanding warrants. You weren't faced with two men late at night, with armed and pumped up, as you might say. First of all, you can refuse to talk to police officers. You say, "Officer, I want to go about my business. I'm not feeling well. If you want to talk to me, I got to tell you, I have nothing to say to you." At which point he or she may say, "Well, I want to run here, you for warrants." And that's just my ID. The proper response to that is to say, "Officer, you have no right to even detain or speak to me unless you have reasonable suspicion that I've been involved in some kind of crime. You need to talk to me about that. What specifically, specific facts do you have that would indicate you have reasonable suspicion that I'm doing anything that requires me to speak to you whatsoever?" Which probably gives me trouble. I can run you through as the officer if you wish to arrest me.
You can do that at any time. Well, I felt the conduct of the officers the other night was poor, and that they were trying to intimidate me, bottom line. I don't think that they had any reasonable grounds to detain me. They had heard some information about me, but again, nothing has been legally brought against me for anything I've done. I have a clean record. I'm just trying to survive out here in Santa Cruz. I think my only problem, and the only reason I'm getting hassled here in Santa Cruz, is because I don't own real estate. I don't have a place to live.
And that's obviously the answer to your problems. Get an inheritance. Come on, man. Get some big bucks and just stop all this messing around. I want to thank you, Casey. I see you've looked over the street shit sheet.
Well, I'm going to keep up the good work. I appreciate the interview.
I appreciate the information.
Regarding the Lloyd warrants, Lloyd, we spoke a couple of weeks ago.
So if you have any problems with the Santa Cruz Police Department, I encourage you to publicize them. I encourage you to file complaints if you think that's suitable at the Citizens Police Review Board, however ineffectual and actually per police that board is, because they do keep a record of those complaints at 429-3262. 915 Cedar Street, open Monday through Thursday, 9 in the morning to 1 in the afternoon.
can give me a call, 423-HUB. That's almost not at the Friendship and Freedom, or you can call Stop Police Abuse Now. Sort of understaffed, but well-intentioned. And a good group that documents police misconduct called Stop Police Abuse Now, SPAN, 475-2012. Now we're going to listen to an update interview with Lloyd Lawrence. Lloyd is a man who, an elderly vet, and actually much of this case is described in the interview that follows. We talked with him about a week ago, and we again ran into him on the street. He was harassed. Well, he was actually medicating himself with a catheter by an officer. He tackled by Officer Northrup. We ran into him and his family on the street, two of his sons, one of his daughters or daughters-in-law, downtown. He gave us an update because Lloyd has not only responded by protesting this ticket, his protest has taken the form of a large fine on his van, as well as a potential legal challenge. Let's hear what Lloyd has to say about this.
The circumstances. I think it was for camping. Because you're in your vehicle, medicating yourself with your catheter, and we actually talked about this episode on Free Radio Santa Cruz a couple weeks ago. Officer Northrup pounded on your door in a loud manner, in spite of your handicap plates. He was so startled and shocked by the whole thing. Did you disengage yourself in the medical process? Came to the door, you guys explained to him what was going on. First, he went to the window and asked to identify himself. He declined to do that, demanded you come out. Come to the van,
No, you've got it right on. And we could have mitigated this right there if I had been approached by a reasonable officer who was interested in justice. He wasn't. He was very, very officious. Not official. He was officious in his manner. And was very bad and very mean-spirited. And I tried to show him and tried to mitigate the need for this ticket by showing him the apparatus that I have to use, the medications that I have to use, the doctor's orders, written orders to use this device, and to explain to him that if I don't use it, I'll get bladder infections. And as a direct result of his intimidation, and I was down to my last catheter, I had to interrupt the voiding of my bladder.
What were the consequences of that?
I ended up in the VA hospital 3 days later with a bladder infection with the side effect of bronchitis and coughing, irritated hemorrhoids. I don't need that. I don't need this. I've already got the cancer battle. But my resistance is way down, and I have an enlarged prostate, and I have to drain this bladder in a prone position because I can't stand or sit because it cuts off the ureter. I know it isn't nice for people to hear these kind of
facts,
but these are the facts. And I don't wish him any harm. I really don't. I just think that he needs sensitivity training, and I've seen several other officers that I would think also need it. And you know, I think if I were the chief of police at this time, I think I would, as a matter of course, have the officers as a study in what they're dealing with. Put out to a pair of jeans and a t-shirt and a pair of shoes and say, here, survive for 24 hours in this city as if you were homeless, and learn what it's all about. I am not homeless. I am homeless only because I want to be, not because of circumstances. I have a home. But I'm over here because I can't handle the heat in the San Joaquin Valley at this time of the year. I come here and I spend about $2,000 a month in this city. I pay taxes, and I expect to be represented. This taxation without representation is tyranny. Let's face it. You know, that's really a fact. And many people here think the homeless ought to go away, that they don't have a place in the city. I had a woman tell me in one of the restaurants here, they should make one street available to the homeless and have them leave us alone. And I said, well, ma'am, how about let's reverse the process? Let's have them have all of the city and take you to a street that can be your haven. And let them have free run of the city, and let's corral you on the one street with no restrooms, no place to sleep, and no food, no garbage cans to eat out. You know, Gus, my friend who's schizophrenic that I've been helping since I came to town here the other day, got his third ticket. This one was for eating out of the garbage cans. I couldn't believe it. Now, I don't know what they call it. It's probably messing with the garbage cans. But all he was doing was eating, and it's obvious that Gus survives by eating out of these garbage cans.
Now, it seems to me that this, you attempted to have this ticket, because we had an interview before, dismissed. And we talked to Sergeant Varner, who I guess actually took a sympathetic point of view and actually spoke to Officer Northrup, but Northrup, you were telling me, declined to have the ticket dismissed.
Well, I don't know the exact conversation because I wasn't there. All I know is Sergeant Varner was a gentleman. He is not officious, or at least he wasn't with me. He even made a point to follow up the next week and find me and search me out and told me of his unsuccess in mitigating it with Officer Northrup. And he says Officer Northrup told him that the courts had been sustaining him that if someone doesn't answer the door of an RV very soon, it's prima facie evidence that they're sleeping. Actually, what really bothers me is, what is his probable cause to even knock on my door? You can't see into my vehicle. You can't see whether I'm sleeping or whether I'm connected up to a catheter or anything else. So, what business did he have coming with shotgun-like power, with that club or his hand or whatever he used to get at my door and scared the hell out of me? I also have a heart condition, and I felt myself going into what's known as AFib. My heart started fluttering. I thought they were gunshots. Well, that kind of treatment of anyone. I don't care whether you're homeless or whether you're the richest man on the hill. Is uncalled for.
Do you yourself have been a police officer in the past in Hayward?
Yes, in the city of Hayward back in the 60s. As an engineer, I couldn't find a job. You couldn't buy a job in the Mississippi Space Branch yet. And the only jobs available were those that of civil service, of that type of thing. And so I became a police officer, and I also did work for a private company doing bouncing, you know, at dances. I'm 6'3" and 300 pounds. At that time, I was about 240 and pretty buff, you know. But I was a normal, only a bigger version, much, much bigger version. You know, that's another thing that bothered me about his demeanor. He kept backing away from me. And I thought maybe it was body odor or something. And so I asked him, do I offend you in some way, sir? And he said, no, I'm just keeping a safe distance from you. It almost sounded cowardly. Well, yeah. That's probably a better word. And so I was really wondering about whether this guy should have a badge and a gun. Is he the type of person that really, I think his hot dog will pass. It passed for me. I had my comeuppance one day. And I think that he's a newer officer, and as he seasons in, maybe he'll become a good one. But right now, I wouldn't recommend.
Tell us about that.
Well, I just have a First Amendment right to protest what's happened to me.
Right. What does that protest involve?
It involves going down to Kinko's and making up a sign, getting on the computer and saying because of having cancer and using this, and I display the apparatus that I was using that
day.
The catheter and then the bag that catches the urine. I got this, and I blew up the ticket in equal size and put it beside it. And at the bottom, I said, Hitler also oppressed the ill, because that's the way I felt. I felt like I was in Nazi. I know that's a very radical thing for me to say, you know, Nazi. But if you really look, that's how that started in Germany. A little here and a little there. And, oh, we can sacrifice the gypsies today and the Jews tomorrow. When is it your turn? When does it get up the ladder? It finally did. It even engulfed the whole Gestapo system. How many people did they hang with wires because of paranoia and suspicion? So, I don't know. A wise man once said, my neighbor was offended by me. I'm paraphrasing now. So he built a fence to keep me out. And wise man that I was, I had the wit to build a bigger fence to fence him in. And I think that that's what they need to think about here, is how to deal with the problems of the homeless, of the poor, without being mean-spirited. There's plenty of ways of doing that if they would just use their intelligence and their heart. And I see some people in this town who are heartless. I see many, many that aren't, including police officers. I see very good police officers here, and Sergeant Varner, I count amongst those, honest, I do.
What is this? Have you had many people talking to you about this sign? Any conversations developed? It's very well lettered, and it's very prominently displayed on your car home?
Well, actually, I had many, many people stop and read it. The comments come, I was expecting about 50-50 get out of my town to, sorry, this happened to you. I never got any negative feedback from this. I got compliments for the sign that it was well done. I got many people saying that happened to me, such as four people who had come to town to see beautiful Santa Cruz, were Catholics and went to the Catholic Church and asked permission of the nuns to stay in the parking lot overnight, and was granted that permission only to have the same thing happen to them that happened to me verbatim. They gave me the same story. They beat on their door, threatened them. They told them that they had permission. And the officer told them that the nuns had no right to give that permission, and that this law applies to both public and private property. Now, I wonder if the mayor had guests come to town overnight in an RV and happened to park in his driveway. And
her driveway?
Or her driveway. Shows you how much I know about the body politic here. But can you imagine what would happen if an officer went up into his driveway or her driveway and beat on that door and wrote all of her guests tickets at 167? I was told it was 240. The ticket that I got in the mail said 167, which goes to 267 if you don't respond. Now, here's the thing. You can't respond if you're from out of town the same day or the next day. You have to wait 2 weeks for it to get into the computer, a week to 2 weeks. Well, those people go home 300 or 400 or 500 miles from here. Where are they? They can't go before a magistrate. It would be ridiculous to pay another $300 or $400 to come here to mitigate a ticket. It makes it impossible. So someone told me that I trust that the city budget has 40% fines and meter violations in this city. So that appears to me to be a law enforcement industry. And it's calculated to take advantage of tourists and the homeless. Homeless, most of them don't pay their tickets. They usually go to warrant. This very good friend of mine who's a schizophrenic, he doesn't know which end is up. He's not competent to stand trial. And those tickets will go to warrant, and when they find him, throw him in jail. He'll go before a judge, and the judge will give him community service. So he'll have the rake in his hand and the hoe in this city. And that reminds me again of Germany. They were called concentration camps, of course. But the people were put to work, and work will set you free. Do you remember it? Huh? Well, I know that this is an over-exaggerated statement, but not too exaggerated when you really think about it. Slowly, creepingly, tyranny comes upon us. And when good men do nothing, it will survive and flourish.
The only thing that evil needs to flourish is that good people do nothing.
Yeah, that good men do nothing. Yeah, I was trying to paraphrase. I remember reading it in one of the essays. I think it was Pope's. I'm not trying.
I'm glad that you are informing the public of just what happened to you in the most convenient and clear and articulate way that you can with this sign on your vehicle. You said also that a lot of people don't know about the sneaking van law.
Oh, many of them. That you got, I'm going to use an expletive that you can delete. But many of them said, you've got to be shitting me. I can't sleep in my own city. I can't park in my own driveway and sleep in my RV. I can't pitch a tent in my yard. And I said, well, read it. It's right here. I had a copy of the ordinance for them. And according to that ordinance, you may not on public or private property. Boy.
With the exception of churches, three vehicles, permission of the church, apparently those police officers were not only harassing the people who were sleeping on the property, they were lying to them about the law, or else the police officers were misinformed about the law.
Yeah, and those people were from out of state. And they're gone. There's four of them that will spend $167 or ignore it and let it become another pile of paper on their warrant list, which, and they will resolve never to come and spend their money again in Santa Cruz, knowing that it's a local warrant and a non-traffic. So they're not going to affect their ability to license their vehicle or anything like that. So it'll just become another pile of paper in the city, and they will tell 10 more people each, that's 40 more people, stay the hell out of Santa Cruz.
You'll be going to court on this ticket at some point in the next few weeks, I think.
Well, I have 30 days to answer it. I think I'll find a reasonable judge and mitigate it and get it dismissed. If not, I'll appeal it until that happens, or I just give it up, one or the other.
Remember how strongly you felt about it when we last talked about you, Stanley? You still feel very strongly about this.
Yes, and I'm very angry that my life was endangered. As I told you, I have heart. I have these other afflictions, and I'm not trying to boo-hoo it here. I'm just telling you that when something like this happens, predictably, it happens for no reason. It makes you angry when you go in harm's way and have to go to the hospital to get straightened out. You know, I'm an old man, and I paid my dues to be a citizen of this country, and I respect it and respect the laws, but I don't respect tyranny. And I'm not a flag waver, but when my toes are stepped on, I express myself. It's called ouch.
A very articulate ouch from Lloyd Lawrence. Thank you, Lloyd.
My pleasure.
This is your community policing hotline. To inform on your neighbors, press 1. To inform a member of your family, press 2. To obtain war surplus surveillance equipment for your neighborhood watch group, press 3. To make a special contribution to your BCOP, press 4. And thank you for calling your community policing hotline.
You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is the recorded October 1st edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. I'm down at the Civic Auditorium trying to talk some sense to the City Council, or I should say, trying to talk to the community since the City Council isn't listening. I invite you to come on down there too. 7 o'clock on Thursday evening tonight is the Bayview School Candidates Forum, in case you want to go to that, at Bayview, at the Mission of Bay, I should say. And then at 7:30, the Planning Commission meets the City Council Chambers at City Council Chambers on the issue of Terrace Point. Regarding the snitch hotline, which of course you can also catch on the streets by just talking to any of the hosts in downtown Santa Cruz, you just heard a satirical bit from Carol Denny up at the Jolly Roger Comedy Troupe in Berkeley. Interesting article appeared in today's Santa Cruz Sentinel. Santa Cruz police say Grant, in effect, adds 10 officers. And the idea is that on Wednesday, the police department learned it was the recipient of a $246,000, $263 technological grant. $246,263. But Deputy Chief David Larson said it will free up existing officers to do the work of 10 additional hires. News of the grant, which will put laptop computers in patrol cars to cut officers' desk work, came as a pleasant surprise for Sergeant Lauren Baker. That's a Butchie Baker, or Sticky Fingers Butchie, as those of you who were around in 1992 may remember. Those of you who were around in 1998 may remember Deputy Chief Larson. This is, what do we call him? I don't remember his nickname, but Larson was famous for claiming in a report that I was trying to raise funding at the homeless table to arm the street people. I remember that particular bit of confidential information as the police department under Chief Bassett went after me, and we were again attempting a series of measures to give rights to homeless people. We were actually seeking a much more mild version of amending the sleeping portions of the camping ban to allow simply vehicular sleeping, with those people without vehicles kind of left out, which is what Eugene, Oregon did recently, about a year ago actually, and I guess they amended their law to remove the industrial district section, unfortunately, because of effective merchant pressure, not because the plan had failed in any way. And Portland is now in the midst of a similar upheaval. Like the Portland Campaign for Legal Places to Sleep is going to be starting civil disobedience probably within the next few weeks if the Portland City Council doesn't respond. But the reason I read this article about the grant, this is a grant from the Justice Department's Cops More 98 program. And it's interesting because this whole business of funding community neighborhood snitches, the Resource Center for Scott Kennedy, sometimes known as the Resource Center for Nonviolence, accepted a COPS grant, I guess, over the objections of people like Doug Rand and others who felt it would result in impermissible, inextricable involvement with the force and violence used by the police department, which is in direct contradiction to the Resource Center for Nonviolence supposed Gandhian approach. Again, it's kind of a corrupting, again, the corrupting influence of money is seen here. It sounds good, puts laptop computers in patrol cars. Who can argue against laptop computers? I guess what I'm arguing about here is the way the police department is generally operating in terms of a kind of a law and a society unto itself that does not interact with, frequently doesn't live in the city, and it certainly doesn't have any real input or control from the city. Along with this federal grant, another $82,088 will arrive via the Supplemental Law Enforcement Service Fund, which the City Council has set aside for community policing efforts. This amount represents a 25% cash match the Justice Department program requires from local authorities. California Senator Barbara Boxer announced Wednesday that statewide more than $53 million in federal funds will help to redeploy 1,989 officers who are now burdened with paperwork or stuck in station houses. The Justice Department's Office of Community-Oriented Policing Services, or COPS, Community-Oriented Policing Services is the acronym for COPS Services. The other is the acronym for Community-Oriented Policing Services. Supply of the phones. The city police department will connect its dispatch system to the computers, which then we put in patrol cars, Larson said. Hence, officers can file reports, make inquiries, and even get information from a new records management system, all without stepping out of their cars. Which doesn't sound bad. Of course, one would wonder why, for example, the reports on the shooting of Brian Andrus, the man who was shot 5 times by Sergeant Hennig, Officer Berry, and Officer Zamenik on March 15th of this year, as they broke into his house, why their reports were not filed until weeks and weeks later. I suppose it might be because they didn't have laptop computers in their car, so maybe this will speed along their reports. I have my doubts, but let's see.
This is your community policing hotline. By the year 2020, at the present rate of incarceration, everyone will be in jail. See you there, and thank you for calling your community policing hotline.
You just panhandle a cup of coffee from the roasting company, and you're on the streets.
Yeah, I really hate asking anybody anything for free, because I wanted them to know they can say no, and I'm all good with that. But my friend got one, so I figured I'd try and get one. The guy was nice, actually.
Well, they probably have coffee left over, too.
Well, this is the time of day to get it. I don't come
over the pizza, Max.
Yeah, but you need a buck usually for that. Pizza My Heart. I said that Pizza My Heart is a yuppie institution run by a capitalist slime, and I'm going to open up an institution next door. Put them out of business. We're going to call it Pizza My Ass.
Well, now, you yourself have been... Do you sleep outside, or...?
I've got a little Toyota truck with a camper shell on it. I'm sleeping. A little RV, they call it, but it's really not very big. And I've got fiberglass falling on me at night, and I've got pneumonia that's been happening. So it's really trashing my lungs. I need somebody to fix it. It's broken 4 ways running.
How long have you been in this vehicle sleeping at night?
Off and on now for about 9 months. And I had another car I slept in for years before that, but it got totaled. Because I was trying to help somebody.
You look pretty, you know, your beard looks nicely trimmed, you look clean, you look together.
Actually, to tell you the truth, through the beneficence of the U.S. government, once I jumped through lots of hoops, which I'm doing again and not having a good time, but and one friend who I owe over $3,000 to and lived for an entire year rent-free on his couch in Tucson, Arizona, and then he moved here, so like an idiot, I followed him. He really likes me a lot at this point, but he's a good guy, but yeah, I'm trying to get out of this situation. I will be well enough to work here soon, America, in case you're interested. I lived on your dole for 3 years. I have a number of... I did a bunch of painting recently.
How's painting?
Yeah, I do general labor. I do various things, including I was an English major at Berkeley, so I'm an excellent writer, editor, tutor, daycare teacher.
Outspoken.
Yes, carpenter. Man of all trades, basically, you know. I do everything okay and very few things reasonably well, so I get by.
How are the police treating you?
The cops don't know what to make of me this time for the sole reason that at first when I got here they thought I was a yuppie, but now I haven't had a shower for 2 weeks and I'm in the same clothes, so they've decided to subject me to their homelessness eradication program, which basically involves rudeness and insidious legalism. And you don't know when they're going to be legalistic because it's dependent on when they decide you're something they want to mess with.
Insidious legalism, give me an example of what that means.
Well, you can't sit on this, you can't stand on that, you can't lean against a tree. There's a law against tree molestation, people. Get a clue? Hello? I mean, you know, the sexual connotation of that law, one way or another, if they want to make tree assault crime, molestation, what I get.
The closest to trees can't be.
Yeah, questionable. Well, I... With the proper intent, I would allow the molestation, but it should be a separate. It should be a separate charge, and only if it's against the tree's personal liberty. Otherwise, it's consenting sex between an adult and a tree.
Adult person and an adult elf.
An adult, yes, elf, exactly. But other than that, they're willing to give you assistance, but they're so abusive in giving it to you that they're trying to get you to leave. And what they don't realize is, A, they make you stay longer, and B, they make you crazier in the process, which means that they create the need to give you more money, because if they just help you up front and get you to leave, you'd leave. But once they make you jump through 14 hoops and stay 6 weeks, then you're exhausted, stay another 6 weeks,
start over,
get a few tickets, get a charge for stealing a candy bar, which I do have. I'm really sorry, Santa Cruz, really I am, and I'm gonna go do your 100 hours of community service, but they won't give me an appointment for 3 months from now, and this happens. I come back, I try to go to court about it, but they don't have community service for 3 months. I leave within a month and a half, which is what they want me to do anyways. Then I come back and I still have this problem. It's just a never-ending cycle, unfortunately.
You're retaining your sanity through perhaps the good humor approach.
That, and I'm all out of ice cream, Frank, Johnny. I only have a sock and a wiener schnitzel, and that's all I've got left. It's kind of a bummer. But yes, I had some good humor the other day, and it was excellent. Some good humor and a bit of cheer.
Occasionally a piece of pizza,
which the one dude will sell you. Don't buy pizza, my heart, until the last 15 minutes they charge a buck. You gotta get the one dude with the short-haired girl. She's not giving it to you, period. But that one guy will hook you up.
These are all the tips from the man on the inside who's on the outside. Uncle John,
thank you, John. You're most welcome. Yeah, thank you.
Oak trees in the Potomac.
Yeah, and the thing is that the park rangers aren't too bad, but the one police officer who caught me, he caught me on under the tree that he caught me across the street from him, next to the graveyard by the river, which is actually not illegal officially if you check the Sea World's lands, the bond ball process. But the time he caught me there, he was putting one finger on at a time of his glove, as if to say, if you don't leave here soon, you will be subject to physical violence. Told me, you're going to be gone in an hour. And I said, yes, sir, I'm going to be gone in an hour. Not because I don't have my rights, but because I don't want my ass.
You heard that he had his left.
Yes, you got it. That is... But, you know, and then the other time, it was interesting because they showed up and we had just been smoking questionable substances of very aromatic bunch of nature, and the park rangers were nice, but they were very condescending, and they said, look at the riffraff being here, meaning me, and they searched me illegally, and basically didn't find anything, because I don't carry weapons, hard drugs, or sex toys, and none of those was I carrying, you know, and so they basically decided I was harmless, but were very condescending, and pretty much attempted to make our situation worse by being mentally abusive.
Well, it sounds like those park rangers that I know and love.
Yeah.
Or even some rangers, as I call them.
Yes, these were not Earth First rangers. These were actual U.S. certified grade A wannabe Nazi rangers.
The major green porkers.
Yes, green pork. And there was one nice guy, and he cut the lawn. And due to cut the lawn, you're beautiful, I love you, you let me stay there, you saw me, I know you did. But the rest of y'all need to get a clue of your life.
Thank you, Uncle John.
You're right.
Okay, well.
Show me a prison. Show me a jail. Show me a prison man whose face is growing pale. And I'll show you a young man with many reasons why. And there but for fortune may go you or I. Show me an alley, show me a train, show me a hobo who sleeps out in the rain, and I'll show you a young man with many reasons why, and there but for fortune. Show me the whiskey stains on the floor.
That's Phil Oaks. And that's the segue into the next segment, which is a flashback to Rick Peterson, who was an across-the-street neighbor witness to the shooting of Brian Andrus. He actually showed up just a moment after it happened. You're going to hear the interview I had with him a day or two. Actually, I think it was actually about an hour after it happened, maybe even half an hour. We came to Button Street, flagged down by David Silva, who saw something happening over there or heard something happening. And we played this before. Rick wanted to testify to what he saw at court, but he was turned down by Judge Robert Attuck, I believe, although it's not entirely clear exactly what happened. Again, the good news is Brian Andrus was not found guilty, nor was he found innocent. There was a hung jury, 10-2. A conviction requires a unanimous verdict, either guilty or not guilty. So he will either be tried again, or the charges will be dismissed. And if he is tried again, I hope that the defense is stronger and brings up such obvious points as if the officers thought it was an emergency and that someone was actually in danger inside the household, then why didn't they break in 5 minutes before they did? There was no particular event that had them break in except Laurie Andrus, Brian Andrus's wife, simply telling him she didn't want him in the house and closing the door. This apparently offended the officer's male ego and his pride, and he shoved his way in. The other possibility, of course, or the much saner one, and the one we hope will be the outcome of this, is that officers will develop better procedures for dealing with these kinds of situations, particularly with their infants in the house and children in the neighborhood, because that was the situation at 200 Button Street on March 15th when this all happened. Let's hear Rick Peterson give his perspective.
Reported with all the kids around here, and it's really unfortunate that my son borrows his skateboard all the time, and you know, and to have my son see him get shot down right in front of his face is pretty devastating for most of the kids around here, because he was an avid surfer and skateboarder. So
sure, I can't get that on camera.
No, not yet.
Okay.
But I tell you what, I live in that blue house.
Okay.
As soon as I find out more detail.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks a lot. So, then was Brian a violent man as far as you know?
Well, the only violence I know in his past that he has had an altercation with a policeman before.
What sort of altercation?
I don't know. I don't know the details about it.
Right.
But I suppose he's like you and I. He was real leery about the police force, and he was a big guy, and he was big and tall and in good shape.
Did he ever threaten you?
No, he's real gentle with us.
Did you see him with your kids?
No, not at all.
Did he have an alcohol problem as far as you could?
Never seen him drunk in my life. That's why they say he came home drunk tonight. In fact, I was just talking to my wife about it, and 1 year, I've never seen him intoxicated once.
He's a white cocktail.
Yes.
And his first name's Brian.
Brian, yeah.
You know about how old he is?
Probably about the same age I am. Mid-30s, maybe. But I've never seen him intoxicated once. Never once.
And how much time?
I know his wife didn't drink, so I don't know if I doubt very seriously he did. He was just, you know, he's sober. Well, I've never seen him intoxicated.
Did he have a bad temper?
I never seen it.
Do you have mental problems? I'm looking for all the things that they're going to appear in the paper tomorrow morning.
Right. Well, you know, I don't know, that's hard to say. He was just quiet, but he played with all the kids, he skateboarded with all the kids. Not any mental disabilities that I know of.
So he was a sociable fellow, good with children?
Not highly sociable, quiet actually.
Now, you say that your wife heard from Laurie, his wife, that the incident really acquired immediacy and a problem because she felt she was being bothered by the police, or
yes, that's what she claimed. Yes.
Do you know exactly what happened?
We had her. No, not really. But I will know, and you're more welcome to call me. We'll get to the bottom of it.
Hotline.
By the year 2020, at the present rate of incarceration, everyone will be in jail. See you there, and thank you for calling your community policing hotline.
Landlord and general ne'er-do-well, Phil Bear. Hi, Phil.
Hello there, Robert.
You're that person who had a big day ahead of you. This is the last evening coming up of the city council, well, so-called oral communication period, more like an anal communication period, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes.
In the sense that we're dealing with a body that doesn't seem to be listening.
They speak from both sides of the...
Both sides of their intestinal tract.
Yeah.
I guess what comes in is... For them, what goes out, the only thing that they put into their, well, why get into these rather sordid and defeated metaphors? I'm really calling you because we're going out on the air with this interview about the same time, between 6 and 8, when the city council's having its final oral communication session. I guess the candidates will be talking about this whole thing at 7 o'clock at the Bayview School up on Mission.
Yes, unfortunate conflict in timing.
Be dealing with, I guess, another issue. I think it's either Terrace Point.
Yes.
7:30 in the chambers tonight. So for all you listening out there on the airwaves, you might want to go to one of those three meetings and to take your radio with you if you're lucky enough to have a radio. In the meantime, for the rest of you at home, we're talking to Phil Bear. Hi, Phil.
Hello there, Robert Norris.
Gee, I see that for the first time, the Sentinel, in another attempt to